you're a great lover and appreciator of Southern mountain music, and I'd like to hear, you know, where that started. It says in your bio that your mother was from Virginia, so, and I believe you've done a lot of field research, and so I'd like to hear a little bit more about that.
Sure. One thing that I do tell people when they ask about the connections between the journalism work and music, which I think I can easily talk about, is that for me, the two things are, they're basically the same. They're storytelling. In other words, as a journalist, my idea is to understand people's stories and to help share them. And the music that I first was exposed to as a kid from my mom's repertoire out of central Piedmont, Virginia, was largely songs that told people's stories. And it got me interested in the music and the stories at once. Then, as I sought out older musicians to learn from, I started to understand that their stories were as interesting as the music they played, that they wouldn't be around forever, and that I wanted to understand the ways in which they lived in times that were very different from the times in which I grew up. Now, decades later, I'm really getting a lot of pleasure out of sharing some of these stories, both through the music and through the memories that I have of spending time with a lot of these people when I go out to play. And because the world has changed so much, with new media and new lifestyles, a new economy, very different from the old agricultural economy, I'm finding people are ever more interested in the old music and the stories of those times. It's been amazing to me over the past couple of years. It's what people seem to want more than anything else. What was it like?
I think of Piedmont area as being blues. Do you also explore some blues also?
I play a little blues, but old-time music, bluegrass, blues, and jazz are all so closely related that if you really look back at what was going on in Piedmont, Virginia, and Appalachian, North Carolina, Virginia, Tennessee, West Virginia, there are more similarities than differences. My mom's first music came from elderly black people in the Bedford and Lynchburg areas of Virginia. But what I noticed, especially when I went to college at Oberlin for a couple of years in the early 70s and ran into other people who were interested in old-time music, was that the old-time repertoire shared a lot of songs in particular with the repertoire that my mom showed me. And as I met some of the older musicians, I realized that the black musicians such as Turner Fodrell from Stuart, Virginia, and white musicians like Fields Ward from Independence, Virginia, shared a number of songs, and they also shared an approach to the music. There are so many blues influences in old-time string band music and old-time songs that it's hard to mistake. The Piedmont's known for blues, but there was also a tremendous well of old-time music there. The Appalachian region is, you know, popularly known for string band music and hillbilly songs, if you want to call them that. But there was also quite a bit of blues influence there. So the music I play crosses all those boundaries because it's what I grew up with and what I was exposed to as a young person and a young adult as well.
I'm really fascinated by the lecture that you're going to be giving. In terms of it, from what I read through, you're really talking about the effect of radio on old-time and bluegrass music. And from what I've read, you know, the advent of radio and records is what really exposed people to music that wasn't necessarily right in their own backyard. It gave a lot of musicians also opportunities to play and be heard where they couldn't before. So could you speak a little bit more on that particular lecture that you're going to be giving?
Yeah, well, as far as the talk, I think, I guess I'd rather call it that.
Okay, all right.
So much,
we'll have to change it on our website then, because I think we're writing lecture.
You know, I really just want to kind of share this informally with people, but I think that radio had a number of effects on communities. Some of them, as you say, let me just start that sentence again. It did expose people to music from farther away than mm-hmm. they might have heard otherwise. Mm-hmm. And that had the effects of homogenizing music mm-hmm. to some extent, even as it had the positive impact of letting people hear things from farther away. If you listen to recordings of old music, of old-time music, from before the days of radio, mm-hmm. and some of the earliest recording sessions, for example, the Bristol sessions in 1927, if you hear the musicians who came into that session, they sound like almost nothing you would hear today in their uniqueness. Mm-hmm. Every band, every group, every individual seemed to have a signature that was unmistakable.
Mm-hmm.
As you listen to later recordings and music that went out over the radio, they still are very representative of old-time music. They're distinctive in terms of their place in American culture. Yet you can hear people trying to sound like other people who may not have grown up anywhere near where they were.
Mm-hmm.
So radio united communities, in my experience, and it also, at some level, homogenized music
mm-hmm.
or
mm-hmm.
spread styles much farther than they might have been spread in that amount of time
mm-hmm.
had radio not been around.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
What I found when I was working at WPAQ in Mount Airy, North Carolina in the 1980s was that there had been a tremendous and very interesting merging of styles. You know, when you asked about blues, on that station, we were broadcasting in the 1980s everything from country blues to blues-tinged bluegrass
mm-hmm.
to the old fiddle tunes that sounded very English of southwestern
mm-hmm.
Virginia, to the round peak music of Tommy Jarrell and his contemporaries, which combined both some of those English and Irish tunes with a real blues sensibility.
Mm-hmm.
And all of this was very vigorously represented within that community.
Mm-hmm.
Part of it was the music of the community itself, and part of the vigor of the music was, I think, due to the presence of that radio station.
Mm-hmm.
So when I was working there, it was really interesting to see the interplay of the local and the national, or the local and the regional, through radio.
Mm-hmm.
Working at WPAQ taught me a lot about the positive role that radio and media can play in communities to bring them together.
Mm-hmm.
And the work that I'm doing at NPR is a direct outgrowth of that.
Mm-hmm.
Whether it's a geographical community or a community of the mind doesn't really matter to me. But media do allow people to communicate and to think about ideas together.
Mm-hmm.
So it's really been an interesting time to be in this field, and also to be interested in old-time and traditional music as well as journalism.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
They're two very closely related aspects of my life.
Mm-hmm. So tell me how different is the first half of your concert going to be from the second half, if you kind of explain what
sure.
you're going to be getting on any
yeah,
section.
That's really fun. The first half, a lot of the first half will be solo.
Mm-hmm.
Not all of it, but a lot of it. And I'm going to start with the earliest music that I learned,
mm-hmm.
the old songs from my mom, the lullabies, the old mountain songs that she knew. And some of the earliest fiddle tunes, also the songs of Fields Ward and other people I met when I was a young adult that were similar to the songs that I heard from my mom and I was interested in because they sounded similar. So I'll probably take people through a little journey from those earliest songs on out to meeting some of the old-time fiddle players and going to the square dances. And our show will expand a little bit as we get towards the end of the first set, maybe to more people. And then when we come back in the second set, we will fuse all that with the emerging repertoire of Southern radio. So we'll have some old-time string band music, some blues songs, and some early crossover music between old-time and bluegrass, which to my ear represents some of the greatest expression of traditional musicians in the Mountain South in the 1950s through 80s. Mm-hmm. It was an amazing style, and still is. Mm-hmm. So that's what we'll do. Mm-hmm. And the second half will be slightly more performance-oriented music, because that was what radio was about, and that's what bluegrass was about. And the advent of mass media, the advent of easy transportation, of sound amplification, really helped to change styles somewhat. Mm-hmm. And we'll talk about that and we'll show it.
Mm-hmm.
It's really fun.
Yeah, it sounds wonderful.
Yeah, the second half is really a blast. Well, the first is very enjoyable for most people too, but but the second half just sort of expands. And what I hope is that people will gain a sense of the connections between more modern string band, bluegrass, and old-time music, and what was going on at the, you know, early, during the early part of the 20th century on out to the middle part. There was a big cultural shift after World War II. Bill Monroe started with his band, the Bluegrass Boys, in the 30s and 40s, creating some new sounds, but the new economic and social conditions that emerged after the Second World War really kicked what he was doing into gear, as did Earl Scruggs on the banjo with his new style. But a lot of it, to my ear, and to, just through my experience, had to do with social conditions. And the fiddle style changed because of that. And I will show that. Because I play some of the really old stuff, and I like to play square dances in the more modern style. So we'll be able to make that transition together, all of us, the people who come to the show and the musicians. I hope they enjoy it.
How, just as out of curiosity, how much was that fiddle style affected as it changed by people's access to perhaps taking private lessons, studying classical first? A lot of fiddlers now study classical first. How did that change the sound?
You know, back in those days, I can't really tell you, because I don't know. I do know that now, as you say, I'm seeing a lot of fiddle players who've had a type of training that just wasn't available to them early in the 20th century and up through the Second World War period and beyond. So yeah, you do hear some very, very highly skilled fiddlers now. What I think did happen was that radio, recordings, the advent of easy transportation once again, and electric power to amplify sound, all came together to help advance a longer bow style of fiddle playing that was better suited and also needed, better suited to big dance halls and needed there than the older style. You can't really play in some of the older styles and be heard adequately at a dance in a large dance hall. And once you get a large band behind you that can be heard, you need to do different things with the fiddle, and they help the dancers, those things.
And what instruments are you going to be playing? Just banjo?
I play fiddle, banjo, and guitar.
Okay.
I sing some, quite a bit, because I love songs, and that's sort of at the heart of the earliest music that I learned, and I still sing a real lot. And then we'll have other people also playing guitar, banjo, possibly fiddle, and bass.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. You have answered all my questions.
That's great.
But is there anything else you feel I should know for this article?
Not much that you haven't put in there already, which is the big thing is I hope it's going to be a whole lot of fun.
Yeah.
I'm doing another show like this out in San Francisco in May.
Okay, good.
We did one in D.C., of course, and
right.
Probably do some others. But people really seem to enjoy it. They want to know about this, and it's like an era that's passed.
Yeah. I know. I've had a couple people say to me, I want to learn the music of my family, my mother, my father, you know.
Yeah.
And to me, this is a great way to introduce community that might not be so much used to old-time music.
Encourage people to do it, because every family has a story. And the number of people who have musical stories hidden in their families is probably bigger than any of us recognizes.
Mm-hmm.
It's a tremendous opportunity to go after some of that stuff and understand it. You learn a lot about the people.
Mm-hmm.
As much about the people as about the music.
Well, great.
Hope this helps.
Yeah, no, thank you so much. It's wonderful.
It's fantastic talking with you. I'm so looking forward to this.
Yeah, I am too. It's going to be wonderful. And hopefully you can work something out with WITF, which would be really fantastic.
Yeah, I'll give Joe a call, see what we can pull together.
All righty.
Okay.
All right. Thank you so much for your time.
Let me know if you need anything else. See you.
I will. All right.
Bye.
Bye.